That was supposed to be the high point of the school, right? Who are the winners, by the way? Great. So yesterday we already introduced all the ingredients that we need to construct a standard model from D-ranks. So today we would study some explicit examples. But before we do that, let me first state and prove a simple no-go theorem. Well, just like any no-go theorem, they are interesting because oftentimes they also suggest ways, several ways out, and that give us some hints as to how to construct a standard model from D-ranks. So the theorem is very simple, as follows. So intersecting D-brain models. Without O planes contain necessarily SU2 chiral exotics. So by chiral exotics, I mean chiral fields that are not part of the standard model spectrum. So there are some additional fields that are charged under SU2, and they're chiral. And the proof is, again, a one-line proof. It's very simple. Well, if you have only D-brains but no oriented full planes, the kind of gauge group that you get are UN gauge groups. So in particular, this is where the SU2 would come from. So the SU2 would be part of a U2 gauge group. So now we know that we have three families of quarks that transform as a 3,2 representation. So there are three of them. So remember, there was a point that we emphasized last time. Even though there are no chiral anomalies associated, no chiral triangle anomalies associated with SU2 gauge group, but the Raman-Raman type of conditions are slightly stronger. Namely, you still need to make sure that the number of fundamental and the number of anti-fundamental have to be the same, even for SU2 gauge group. And so this three copies of the standard model quarks give me 9 fundamental representations of SU2, which means that I need 9 anti-fundamental representations to cancel the anomaly. Now, by anti-fundamental representation, all I mean is they have an opposite U1 charge. So sometimes when I write 2 bar, the 2 bar really means that it's a fundamental representation under SU2, but with an opposite U1 charge as compared with the representation 2. So we know that some of this, anomalies could be canceled by the leptons, but that's not enough to cancel the anomalies. If you just count, since 3 copies, if you just count the lepton contribution and the doublet contribution, you still have 6 more doublets to that you need in order to cancel the anomaly. So which means that your spectrum necessarily contains 6 additional SU2 doublets that are not part of the standard model spectrum. So there are strong constraints on chiral exotics. There could be some additional fields beyond the standard model, but if they're chiral, they could not pick up a mass, and so there are strong experimental constraints. And if you try to construct a model that close to the standard model, you would try to eliminate as many of these exotic fields as possible. Okay. So that's the theorem. Now, this theorem also suggests at least 2 ways of how to get around it. One way is a class of models which I would call the U2 class models. And these are the models that make use of the fact that in an oriented flow model, you have metafield transform as n bar representation, but you also have metafield transform as n representation, as we discussed last time. So the three families of quarks, they don't necessarily have to all come from the same type of representation. For instance, you could have the three families of quarks that transform as 3,2 bar, and two copies of them transforming as 3,2. As far as the SU2 quantum number is concerned, you cannot tell the difference. That's just the difference is only hidden in the U1 charge. Until you work out what is a hypercharge, that U1 does not automatically tell you about the charge of the standard model. So as far as SU3 and SU2 quantum number is concerned, they could actually be the left-handed quarks. And so because of this, the quarks only contribute to the anomaly as three fundamental representations, which can automatically be cancelled by the left ones. So if you consider classes of models where the three families is realized in a somewhat split way, you can get an intersecting brain model without the Cairo anomalies that I mentioned earlier. But this also perhaps would give you some interesting family structure, because one of the families is clearly different from the other two. But of course, one has to work out specific models to see whether that's the case. You have to calculate the Yukawa couplings and so on and so forth to see whether this splitting between one of the family with the other two explains the fermion Yukawa hierarchy. So just to give you an example to illustrate that this kind of things could happen, you can consider four stacks of brains. Or stacks of B brains, which I label them with a much imagination as ABCD. And the B brains can be gauged to U3 cross U2 cross U1 cross U1. So the number of brains are in such a way that they give us this kind of gauge group, unitary groups. And if the intersection numbers between these brains are given as follows, A, B prime, just the two. So I'll leave it as an exercise for you to show using the formula that we compute last time, the chiral spectrum, that if you have four stacks of D brains with these intersection numbers, don't ask me where this comes from. The chiral spectrum resulting from this set of D brains is precisely the standard model spectrum together with three right-handed neutrinos. So the usual standard model spectrum, chiral spectrum, plus you also have to introduce three right-handed neutrinos. And of course, this only fixed the non-abelian part of the spectrum, because as we mentioned last time, even though there are a lot of U1s flowing around in the spectrum that you calculate at the string scale, not all of the U1s may survive as actually massless U1 gauge with low energies because of anomaly cancellation, because of anomalous U1, or perhaps they would pick up mass due to this BF coupling. So you also need to make sure that the following combination of U1 is indeed massless. So this gives you some bottom-up constraints on D-brain model building. So it's a very simple exercise. Now, I have to emphasize here that this is not a model. So far, what I have introduced is a set of intersection numbers. I haven't shown you that I have construct a D-brain model with a set of D-brains wrapping around certain special Lagrangian cycles that give you precisely these intersection numbers. So this is at best a Lego. if you wish. So this is more or less a template that you would like to shoot for when you try to look for deep brains wrapping around cycles. What kind of intersection numbers would give you a realistic spectrum? Moreover, even if we were able to find such configuration of deep brains that give you precisely this set of intersection numbers, it is still not a model because it is only a local configuration of deep brains. As we discussed last time, we also need to cancel the Ramon-Ramon tackle. So at best, this is a local model. But why do we spend time on discussing this if it is, you know, so far away from a realistic model? The advantage of doing things at this level is this set of intersection numbers is so generic that it doesn't have to be restricted to, say, the toroidal models or the orbital examples that we're going to discuss. And in fact, models, say from Gapner constructions, as well as Calabria oriented flows, indeed, in those examples, you find that there are brains wrapping around cycles with precisely this kind of intersection numbers. So if you wish, this is a template that would fit many different types of deep brain constructions. Yeah, so actually, I don't know anything about the coupling for this model. So all I have is the chiral spectrum. So to answer your question, I need to actually have a model to compute the coupling. But it's kind of neat that it falls upon you to introduce three right-handed neutrinos, even though there's no something like grand unified theory underlying the whole thing. So if it is an SO10 model, then you would expect there would be some right-handed neutrinos. But this is an honest to God just standard SU3, SU2, U1 gauge group, but the structure of the deep brain intersection gives you constraint on additional particles beyond the standard model. Okay, so is that clear? What's the philosophy behind? So this is a template for model building. Now, this is only one of the ways out, as far as we know. There's another way, also making use of the fact that we have orientable planes. So the other type of models are called USP2 class. And it would become obvious why that's the case. So in this class of models, we can avoid the presence of this SU2 exotics by making use of the fact that these six brains, in the presence of the oriented four planes, can give you not only UN group, but also USP group as well. Remember last time when we discussed the configuration of D brains right on top of the O planes? The gauge group is broken from UN to symplectic group. Now, the nice things about symplectic group is all the representations are real. So the constraints that came from Ramon-Ramon tackle conditions that forces us to introduce chiral exotics before for SU2 gauge group does not apply here. So now we make use of the fact that USP2 is equal to SU2. If we realize the standard model, the electro gauge group of the standard model as a symplectic group, then this class of models also don't necessarily have to contain additional exotic particles. So again, as an illustration, you can show as an exercise that the following deep brain configuration, the following deep brain gauge group, and together with this set of intersection numbers, if you take this set of intersection numbers and compute the chiral spectrum, you find that you have also the chiral spectrum of the standard model, this time without the need of the right-handed neutrinos. So for the same reason that I was mentioning earlier, you also need to make sure that there is a massless U1 field that can that you can identify as a hypercharge, which in this case corresponds to this combination. So in other words, if you were able to find a configuration of D brains that give you U3 plus USP plus U1 plus U1 gauge, with this set of intersection numbers, you have obtained just the standard model. Now, this is an example that we can actually find some very simple toroidal orbital with these six brains to realize this, this set of intersection numbers, and that's what we're going to discuss next. So, also as a more long homework exercise, you can try to construct other examples as well, not only the one that we are going to discuss today. So are there any questions so far? Okay. So supersymmetric. So we now can put everything that we have learned together and try to construct an example which contain the standard model spectrum while preserving supersymmetry. The reason why we are looking at deep brain configurations that preserve supersymmetry is for stability reasons. Of course, you can consider configuration of deep brains that break that don't preserve a common supersymmetry, but then you have to worry about whether the brain configuration is stable or not. So for convenience, we look for examples that have some level of supersymmetry. Now, since we're interested in constructing chiral examples, chiral examples only appears in supersymmetric theories with n equals to 1 or less supersymmetry. And so at least the D brain sector has to preserve n equals to 1. Now, you can imagine that the closed string sector of the theory preserves more supersymmetry than the open string sector. But again, for convenience, we will consider examples that both the closed strings and the open string sectors preserve the same n equals to 1 supersymmetries. So that points us to examples that have n equals to 1 supersymmetry. And just looking at toroidal example itself is not going to get us n equals to 1 supersymmetry. So you have to find a way to reduce the supersymmetry further. And the simplest way to reduce the supersymmetry from n equals to 4 to n equals to 1 is just to orbital the theory. So we will consider a particular example. So what we were discussing last time were mainly about T6 with T6 brains. We're going to consider an orbital of T6, and I'm going to consider a particular example, C2 plus C2. So let me write down the coordinates of T6. So C1, C2, and C3 are complex coordinates. So the two C2 generators act on T6 as follows. Okay. So last time when I asked you, the majority of you know what is an orbital. So you should also be able to see immediately that this two generators give you an n equals to 1 supersymmetric example. OK, so but this is interesting because last time when we looked at just T6, we introduced an orientable 6 planes. The orientable 6 planes is defined as omega times a reflection. Omega is a worship parity symmetry, C2 symmetry, and R is a reflection symmetry. So that defines for us an O6 plane. But we also define in general, when you have a C2 involution, then you could have additional orientable planes as well. And in general, we can define an orientable plane as follows, where omega is the worship parity symmetry, sigma bar is an anti-holomorphic C2 involution that acts on the internal space. So the fact that we have now several C2 generators means that we have several additional orientable planes in the model. In addition to this orientable plane, you can write down other orientable plane. So each of these C2 symmetries that acts on the target space can be considered as an anti-holomorphic involution. So that means that we have four different types of orientable planes. So the story is very similar to what we had before. Namely, the orientable plane would cancel the charge of the D planes. But now that you have several types of orientable planes, so you have to make sure that each of these orientable planes would have the corresponding D planes to cancel the charge. And the chiral spectrum is exactly the same. It's given by exactly the same table as I have given you towards the end of the lecture last time, except that you have to be careful about what we mean by the homology cycle that the brains wrap around. Here, we are considering a quotient space, T6 by the orbital. So the homology cycles are defined with respect to the orbital space and not on the covering space. Other than this little subtlety, everything follows from the previous lecture, rather straightforwardly. And since this is the PI slave camp, I'm going to give you several exercises as well. So first, show that the following set of D-brains. I have to define to you what that really means here. You don't really have to copy it down. You can find it in the review article. What this table means is I have certain D6 brains. The first column tells me how many D6 brains are in each stack. So this means 6 D6 brains are stacked together in the same position. The this set of integers tell us the homology cycles that the least experience wrap around. Remember, we are looking at three cycles that are of the form of a product of one-dimensional cycle. And last time, we defined it this way, Ni times the A cycle times this Mi times B cycle. So this Ni and Mi basically labels the homology cycles that the D6 brains wrap around. So this tells us specifically what three-dimensional cycles that the D6 brains world bottom would be. And so you can easily show that just taking into account the first part of the table, just looking at these four stacks of D brains, it gives you precisely this spectrum. So in other words, this set of D brains give you just the standard model spectrum. Now, then why do I introduce this additional D brains over here? That's because we need to cancel the Raman-Raman tuple. And this additional D brains carry the Raman-Raman charge that take care of the D brain charge carried by all this set of orientable planes. So this would be, if you know how to work out this example, then you have learned everything that we discussed last time. So this would be homework exercise part A, is to show that the spectrum is to show that this satisfies all the Raman-Raman tuples cancellation. So part B is to compute the spectrum, compute the chiral spectrum using this data. Again, a very simple exercise. Part C. So far, I have not checked that this set of D brains preserve supersymmetries. Remember, in order for them to preserve supersymmetries, these three cycles have to be special Lagrange. And for a toroidal example, it's very simple. It just means that the sum of the angle has to be zero up to a multiple of 2 pi. And that puts some constraints on the complex structure of the compact space. So since we're looking at a toroidal orbital, that gives you some constraints on the complex structure moduli. The ratio of, so we're looking at the torus, the ratio of the radii. So only for certain choices of the complex structure moduli for each of these T2, would this set of brains preserve supersymmetry. But you do find solutions. So show that you find solution for chi I, where chi I are the complex structure moduli for each of the T2. And finally, a more general question, part B, is to show that unlike the toroidal example that we discussed last time, in the case of the orbital, the mixed U1 gravitational anomaly is not necessarily zero after the cancellation of the Raman-Raman tuple. So you still need the Green-Strauss mechanism to cancel the mixed U1 gravitational anomaly. And you can see it from this example that just the tuple cancellation does not automatically impose the absence of mixed U1 gravitational anomaly. Okay. All right. So, so I have at least present to you one n equals to one supersymmetric example with almost the standard model spectrum, plus some additional stuff. You'll figure out what it is, and you compute the spectrum in part B. Of course, in the end of the day, you'll find that this model is not fully realistic for a different reason. But as a proof of concept, that tells you that certain things are possible and certain things are not. And and the kind of examples that we are studying here is also interesting for different reasons. Since we have an example which has n equals to 1 supersymmetry and involve only D6 brains and orientable planes, one can show that when you lift this setup in the strong coupling to M theory, they correspond to compactification on singular G2 manifolds. And the reason is that we can just count the supersymmetry. And the fact that these experiments are also explained when you lift it to M theory, they are geometrical, they are part of the geometry, and they are not brain or localized sources in supergravity. So this is something that I don't have time to discuss, but if you're interested, there's a section in part section 2 of a review article that talks about how to lift this n equals to 1 setup to G2 compactification. So the main reason I gave you this example is not that this is a fully realistic example, but I hope that this serves to illustrate some of the concepts that we have learned. But so far, we have been focusing mainly on the open string sector of the theory, because we are interested in getting the gauge and chiral spectrum of the standard model. We have been almost exclusively ignoring the closed string sector. However, there are some interesting aspects about the closed string sector that are relevant for low energy dynamics, and that leads to an additional set of questions, and this is the topic that we are going to come to now. So before we go on to the next topic, are there any questions?
Is the center in the fact that in order to concentrate on the more top of the topics,
you would definitely, it's not a general statement. I don't know how to prove it. So at least for the example that we're looking at, just that, just this part of the spectrum itself does not cancel the tadpoles coming from the oriented plane. You might come up with another example that has a different negative charge of the set negative charge objects in your models, and maybe that's good enough to cancel all the tadpoles.
Good examples, no? What are these questions?
Not that I know of. Right, and hopefully some of the things that we learned here could be adopted to more general setup. So for instance, if you're looking at more general Calabi-oriented flows, maybe some of the problems that we face here could be based in specific examples. Okay. Are there any questions? Yes?
Could you use like background classes to contribute like deeper inverse?
Good, so this is what we're going to come to next. So far, we haven't turned on any background flux, and we don't worry about any closed-string moduli. And the next topic is to study how some of the moduli can be stabilized by fluxes, and in the same time, some background flux could contribute to the tadpoles and help you eliminate some of this additional stuff over there. That's a good point, because the fluxes contribute to Raman-Raman charge as well, so you don't need to introduce that many debris. But there are other problems that come up. So the main question that we have been not addressing is the existence of moduli. And as Frederick and perhaps Liam also mentioned, stabilization of moduli is an important problem, and it's often in immediate relevance to particle physics and cosmology. And you can't really claim that you have a realistic model unless you have a way to say what are the values of the moduli. You cannot predict, for instance, the value of the gauge couplings if you don't know what's the value of the moduli that controls the volume of the cycles, for instance. So since Frederick presumably have cover some aspects about flux compactification. So I will try to cover somewhat different aspects of flux compactifications. In particular, the aspects that arise when one tries to combine background fluxes with deep brain model building. And for simplicity and for concreteness, I will be focusing on type 2B. Flux vacuum. So that these are type 2B bacteria with background free-form flux. And similar analysis should and could in principle be done in other setups. Okay. So to just set our notation, let's remind ourselves some basic properties about the free-form flux. So by flux compactifications, we mean string theory backgrounds with a non-trivial free-form flux, F3 and H3. These are the Ramon, and the NS free-form flux. So this free-form flux has to satisfy the DRT identity. And they have to be properly quantized. So F3 and H3 have to be quantized to be integers. Now, the moment when you turn on background fluxes, you also need to introduce orientable planes. In order to find configurations that satisfy the equation of motions. And the simplest way to see why that is necessary is to note that in type 2B supergravity, you have a trans-Simon couplings of the form H3, wedge F3, wedge C4. So when you dimensionally reduce this trans-Simon couplings to 4 dimensions, this background free-form flux induce a tadpole for C4, which means that the background flux carry the free brain charge. So the background flux themselves also carry tension, energy density, because of the kinetic current. So you need to introduce objects that cancel both the charge and the tension of the D3 brain. And the objects that we need is the O3 plane. So since we are in the 2B setup, the type of orientable planes are different from what we have said before. So we have O3 planes in type 2B. Now, when we have orientable free plane, you can also introduce the E3 brain as well. So the tadpoles, as far as the D3 brain charge is concerned, can have several contributions. Something coming from the D3 brain, coming from the flux, they should cancel the D-brain charge carried by the old oriented flow plane. So this is at least one of the tadpole conditions that we need to satisfy. Now, if we normalize the D3 brain charge to have 1 unit of charge, then an oriented flow free plane carry -1/2 units of charge. The charge carried by the flux, if you are careful with the normalization, you find that N flux over here is equal to 1/4 pi square alpha prime square H wedge F. So I think Frederick or Liam must have introduced this complex free-form flux in terms of the F3 and H3, so that things can be written in a much more compact form. So tau here is the dilaton axion, complex dilaton. So in terms of this G3, the D3 brain charge carried by the flux is equal to I over 4 pi squared alpha prime squared. Have you seen this expression before? At least in previous lectures? Okay, so the important point is that the background flux carries D3 brain charge, and we have to normalize them properly later on when we try to actually find a model that cancels the samples. So the normalization here turned out to be important. Now, Frederick must have told you that in order to satisfy the equation of motion, the free-form flux have to be imaginary self-dual. And you can interpret this requirement as the minimization of the potential coming from a superflux induced superpotential. So if you have G3 wedge omega induced superpotential, minimizing the resulting scalar potential gives you this condition. And so the three-form flux that are imaginary self-dual, you can decompose it in terms of the Hodge cohomology according to the compact structure of the Calabi-Yau. And so there are the 2-0 component, 2-1 component, and 0-3 component. The other components are imaginary anti-self-dual, so they don't satisfy the equation of motion. Now, among these fluxes, only the 2-1 component preserves supersymmetry. The 0-3 component of the flux breaks supersymmetry, although it preserves the no-scale structure of the potential. And the way to see it is, you can look at the F-term equation for the Kalin modulus, and you find that d rho of W, which goes like W, because the superpotential does not depend on the rho modulus. And so in order for the F-term to be satisfied, you cannot have a component which is along the 0-3 component. So just to summarize, and this is a lightning review because I assume Patrick has covered most of what I'm going to use anyways. The 2-1 component of the flux preserves supersymmetry. And the other component of the flux breaks SUSY, but preserves no scale structure. So the vacuum energy is still zero to leading order, even though the supersymmetry is broken. Is that clear? Okay, so now we are going to combine these results about fluxes that you learned last week together with the deep brain model building techniques that we learned in the last two lectures, and try to come up with a model that has the chiral spectrum of the standard model, and yet at least some of the moduli being stabilized by the background flux. Although in the end of the day, you will see that not all moduli are stabilized. There are some additional moduli being unfixed, but at least that gives you an intuition of how things would work eventually when you find that a model that has the best of both worlds. namely having a realistic gauge factor as well as having the module being stabilized. Okay, are there any questions? Okay. So this is a step that is potentially confusing because we have been spending two lectures on type 2A deep brain model building. And all of a sudden we switch to type 2D. And the reason, as I mentioned earlier, is because most of the discussions about fluxes that Patrick has discussed last week, and also Liam as well, we're focusing on the type 2D limit. So we are going to try to adopt as many of the results that we have developed as possible and try to build a model in the type 2B limit instead. So in type 2B, we don't have the D6 brains at our disposal to get chirality. But instead, we can construct chiral models with the so-called B brains. So B brains just means that they're D brains that are wrapping around holomorphic cycles or D brains with holomorphic bundles on them. But as we discussed in the first lecture, there are several ways to construct such chiral models, namely magnetized D brains, or D brains and singularities. These are examples in which chirality arises from B brains. So in the case of magnetized D brains, we are turning on a gauge bundle on the world bar of the D brains, and so these are the holomorphic bundles that that I mentioned earlier. So we will discuss an example of each type so that hopefully by the end of the hour we would cover all three different aspects. But first of all, let's start with magnetized D brains. So as we discussed in the first lecture, one can obtain magnetized D-brains by a simple duality. By a simple duality, magnetized D-brains become angles. So in constructing an example with magnetized D-brains, we are going to adopt everything we have developed for intersecting brains and just perform a simple T-duality. And that would automatically get us to the results that we want. And so the strategy is rather clear now. So all we have to do is to take whatever we had find so far with type 2A, with intersecting D-brain, perform a T-duality. Then we get a configuration of magnetized D-brain that hopefully give us the minimal chiral contents of the standard models. So for instance, an example would be to just take this set of intersecting brains, perform a T-duality to type 2B, and focusing on this part of the spectrum. And we know that a set of brains with the following gauge bundles on the world bottom of them would give us the chiral spectrum of the standard model. Then, since we are already in type 2B, we can introduce fluxes the same way as we did over here. Then, we can try to look for vacuum solutions. And the vacuum solutions that we find will have the features of both, namely, part of it will give us the standard model spectrum, and also by the virtue of fluxes, some of the complex structure modules will be stabilized. So to save time, we are just going to use this result directly. We know that if we just take the T6 mod C2 plus C2, we have the following set of magnetized D brains that give us the standard model. But then the set of oriented full planes would now be different. Instead of a bunch of oriented full six planes, as we had over there, in the type 2A setup. The fourth set of oriental full planes under duality becomes all three planes and three different set of all seven planes. Again, you can easily convince yourself if you perform key duality three times, you can convert this O6 plane to O3 plane plus different sets of orientable seven planes. And O3 planes are, of course, points in the compact space. And the orientable seven planes, there are three sets of them, and the difference between these different sets of orientable planes are the directions that are transverse to them. So they differ in the transverse directions. Kim was mentioning, you can try to cancel the Raman transfer to the O3 plane, not only with the deep rings, but with some fluxes. So let's focus on the Raman tackle for the O3 plane for the moment. So you have, before turning on fluxes, the deep ring charge has to be canceled by the charge carried by the oriental planes, and the counting goes as if you just count all the 64 oriental free planes that exist in the model, each of them carrying 1/2 unit of oriental free brain charge. The total deep brain charge carried by the these three brain has to be 32. But now with the addition of fluxes, there's yet another contribution over here. So the backend solution would be a solution for the tempo. For this tackle equation. This is only one of the tackles, but let's focus on this one for the moment. There are additional ones coming from the O7 planes, but they're not as interesting as the O3 plane because the fluxes only contribute to the D3 tackles. So let's suppress this part of the story for now. So you could ask, if I start from this oriental model, what would n flux be? Now, if we have to come back to what we discussed over here. The background freeform flux has to be properly quantized in, as a multiple, as an integer. But this is a statement on the quotient space. So we are looking at an orbital. So the integral of the fluxes in the C2 plus C2 orbital has to be a multiple of integers. But in the covering space on T6, that means that the fluxes that we need to turn on have to be even bigger because because when you quotient this fluxes in the orbital space, you reduce the fluxes by 1 over n, where n is a number that depends on the order of orbital group. There's a subtlety here, because in addition to the fluxes that you can turn on that already exist in the quotient, in the covering space, namely fluxes that already exist on the torus, you could also turn on fluxes that are supported on some collapsed cycles. There are many orbital singularities there, and if you can find freeform fluxes that are supported on these collapsed cycles, you can also turn on those fluxes. But we are not going to consider those because those fluxes are supported on the cycles that are not in the large volume limit. And most of the discussion about flux complexifications were in the supergravity approximation, and we cannot trust the results if we turn on fluxes that are supported on small cycles. So just to recap, that means that the freeform fluxes that we it to turn on. It's not only on the coupling space. It's not only required to be an integer, but it has to be a multiple of an integer. And n min over here turns out to be 8, if you work it out carefully. 8 because the order of the orbital group is 4, C2 cross C2. But there's another C2 symmetry coming from the oriental projection. So when the dust settles, you find that this is all these fluxes are quantized as multiples of 8. Which means that the D3 brain charge carried by these fluxes has to be a multiple of 64. Because I just erased the formula, but the D3 brain charge carried by the flux is a product of the H3 and the F3. So each of them, if each of them is quantized as multiple of 8, the resulting charge, D3 charge carried by the flux is a multiple of 64. So now we are running into trouble because we are looking at a very specific example. It's simple so that we can work out everything in detail. And we also know that we are always getting there to get the standard model spectrum. But because of the quantization of the flux, this has to be at least 64 in order to cancel the tadpole. So it seems like we are somewhat screwed, because in order to cancel the tadpole, we need to introduce objects that have negative D3 charge. Otherwise, this equation doesn't seem to be satisfied. But that defies the whole purpose of looking at supersymmetric models anyway, because we wanted to look for configurations of D-brains that are under control, and in particular, we want to look for configuration of D-brains that preserve at least n equals to 1 supersymmetry. However, tensor is not necessarily the case. So you can actually find magnetized D brains, magnetized D9 brains. That carries the negative D3 brain charge that we need to cancel the tadpole, and yet preserve the same supersymmetry as the background itself. So how is that possible? So turns out certain magnetized D brains can carry negative D3 charge. And yet preserve the same supersymmetry as the background. So this interesting fact actually is most apparent when you just p-dualize the whole setup to the detector A again and see what happens. So consider the following V6 brains that wrap around the following three cycles. In fact, I was already implicitly using this kind of deep brains in the earlier example, if you pay attention. So there are additional cell deep brains that I introduced over here. For instance, this one is precisely the three cycles that I that I write down over here. As you can see, this D6 brains carries a negative D6 charge along the direction of A1, A2, and A3. So if you look at the D6 brains that are oriented along this direction, the charge of this D6 brains is actually negative, product of these three negative numbers. But yet, supersymmetry is preserved as long as this cycle turn out to be special Lagrangian, which means that the sum of the angle of this one cycle is summed to 0 and mod 2 pi. So why is that possible? Well, we can just draw a picture. So this D6 brains actually looks like this. So the sum of the angle could still be 0 mod 2 pi. And hence, this is a special Lagrangian cycle, provided that certain complex structure of the torus satisfies the pressure. But it does tell us that it carries a negative D6 brain charge. If you just look at the direction where the arrow points to, it tells us that the D6 brains carry negative charge along this direction. So the condition in which this is a special Lagrangian cycle is just that the sum of the angle is 0, which gives you a constraint on the complex structure moduli. Chi1, Chi2, and Chi3 are the complex structure moduli for each of the torus. So as long as this equation is satisfied, you get a supersymmetric defect. So mapping this magnetized D6, D9 brains back to the 2B picture, what that means is you could have D9 brains with some gauge bundle. As long as the gauge bundle that you turn on preserve the same supersymmetry as the background, then even though it might seem to carry some negative D brain charge, it still could preserve supersymmetry. So the statement is the following. In a 2B picture, all this set of integers over here, N and M, which label the homology cycle in the type 2A setup, becomes magnetic flux. So as long as this set of integers, M and N, corresponding to the gauge bundle that you turn on, satisfy this requirement, this gauge bundle still preserves supersymmetry. So translating it back to the 2B picture, it just tells us that the Kalin modulus for each of the torus has to satisfy a constraint. So by a simple duality, you translate whatever we learn from intersecting deep brain models to models with magnetic flux. So notice that this is not a supersymmetric configuration in general. In particular, in the large volume limit, this is not supersymmetric. Only for certain value of the Kalin moduli would the deep brain configuration be supersymmetric. But there are solutions to this equation. Okay. So now we know what we need to do. We already introduced a set of dbrains that could contribute negatively to the tuples. And things are disappearing. Okay, the upshot is there are magnetized dbrain setup, in particular things that look very similar to what I have written over here, that satisfy the dbrain tuple condition. So we can list out the solutions. So, there are solutions to this equation, together with a set of equations for other dbrains. There are three different sets of seven brains as well. And so, it's just a very simple exercise to find solutions to this equation. So, however, there's a point that I have been ignoring all along, which is important, and I should point out over here. So far, I have only listed out the Raman-Raman tuples. So these are certainly conditions that you need to satisfy. Otherwise, there's some inconsistency in the equation of motions for the supergravity Raman-Raman fields. But even if you satisfy all these equations, it's not guaranteed that you have a consistent model. So as I alluded to last time, in the presence of an orientable plane, there could be some additional discrete C2 charges carried by the dbrains. These are oftentimes called the K-theory charge. These are Z2 value charges carried by the dbrains. And so, this Z2 value charges are invisible from the supergravity, from the one loop divergence of the open string diagram. They're also invisible from the cubic anomalies from the low energy effective theory. Remember last time we discussed the connection between the cancellation of the Raman-Raman tuple and anomaly cancellation. Just looking at the cubic anomalies of the low energy spectrum or from the open string one loop divergences, you don't discover there's anything wrong when the model does not cancel this K theory discrete charge. However, if you construct a model where there's a net Z2 value K-theory charge, you would find that there's something wrong with that. So how do I see that something would go wrong if there's some uncancelled C2 value charge? By uncancelled C2 value charge, I mean that if the dbrain carry a C2 odd quantum numbers, you need to introduce an even number of them. So if you have an odd number of such C2 odd value dbrain charge, your model has uncancelled K-theory tuples. So how do I know that something is wrong if this C2 charge is not cancelled? So it turns out there's another anomaly associated with an SU2 group. It's an SU2 global anomaly. And it's oftentimes called the Witten anomalies, for obvious reasons, because he discovered that. So these are anomalies that are not coming from small gauge transformations. So you don't see them from analyzing cubic anomalies of the triangle diagram. But if uncancelled, you will find that the model is inconsistent. And the SU2 global anomaly cancellation amounts to the fact that you can only have an even number of fundamental representation under SU2 group. So if you find that you have a gauge theory where you have an odd number of fundamental representation under an SU2 group, there's secretly an inconsistency. In fact, not only for SU2 group, you can show that any symplectic group, if you have an odd number of fundamental representation, something is wrong. So we can detect this C2 value charge by putting a deep brain probe in this background. So remember, just analyzing the one-loop divergences in the orientable models do not give you this constraint. But suppose you put a probe deep brain on top of any of the orientable planes in the model, the O3 plane or the O7 plane. We know that, as we learned from the last lecture, this would give us a USP group. In particular, that it would give us an SU2 group. So we can use this probe to check whether the model is consistent by just working out the spectrum on this probe deep brains. If you find that the probe deep brain spectrum, the SU2 gauge group, contains an odd number of fundamental representation, the model is secretly inconsistent. And as a homework exercise, you can go through some of the literature on deep brain model building and see whether some of the models that have been advertised before actually turn out to be secretly not satisfying this constraint. So modulo this subtle point, we can now look for solutions to this set of equations. And let me just give you the answer. The answer is very simple. I can just make this G. So this will be a solution. So again, you can check that this satisfies all the tadpole cancellation as long as the following equation is satisfied, namely g squared plus nf plus 4n equals to 40. Simple algebraic exercise. In particular, you can now see that the previous solution that we have found corresponds to the one where nf is equal to 5. And there's no flux, so n is equal to 0, and g is equal to 3. So n here is the integer flux, so nf. So if you stick in this set of deep brains into the tadpole condition, you find that this would be the solution. Yeah.
Can you repeat what you said about putting the probe brain on the O-plane?
Yeah, good. So so it's a roundabout way. It would be nice if there's a more direct way to detect this K-theory tadpoles. So without a better way to measure this charge. See, the point is, all this deep brain charge, there's a corresponding Ramon-Ramon potential that couples to them. So either you solve it from the supergravity equation, or you analyze the one-loop divergence, and you also see what goes wrong if there's some uncancelled charge of this normal D-brain charge. But these are discrete charge, so there's no corresponding Ramon-Ramon potential that I can write down. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see the cancellation of this charge immediately, either from the open string tadpole analysis or from the supergravity point of view. So how do I detect discharge if there's no way to do it with the normal method? I introduced a probe D-brain because I know the probe can see all the problems. The probe D-brain, if they are sitting on top of the O plane, they give us symplectic groups, so USP groups. And so I can analyze the spectrum on this probe D-brain in the presence of all the D-brains in the theory. And so since I introduced so many type of these seven brains and these three brains, I can compute the intersection number between the probe, let's call the probe to be D-brain, D3A, something like that. So I can compute the intersection of this probe D-brain with any other D-brain in the background. And the intersection numbers give me the chiral spectrum. And now I can count the number of fundamental representation charged under this probe D-brain gauge group of the model. And if the number turns out to be odd, then I know that the D-brain background is inconsistent.
Okay.
However, if I turn out to find that this is even, then at least at the level of the probe D-brain, I don't see anything inconsistent.
Okay, so this you do it as to check if your model is has this odd thing regarding the supercharge.
Exactly. So I would like to actually see a more direct approach. For instance, if you have a way to actually measure this discrete supercharge, then I don't have to use this probe D-brain to analyze the model. So far, it has been working, and I don't know of an example that satisfies the probe constraints and turn out to be inconsistent. But there may be something hidden that we don't know. So at the moment, we can only eliminate the problems by checking it with a probe. Yeah.
Something about inconsistency that could arise when there's a global anomaly.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah, so this is an anomaly due to a large gauge transformation. So Winston had this paper in the late 80s, sometime in the 80s when he discovered that he analyzed the path integral and see something would go wrong if you have an odd number of random representations. So, but this is not the kind of anomalies that you see by calculating this kind of diagram. So there's something inconsistent with the path integral when you have when you have an odd number of fundamental representations. Okay. So this may be a little bit more technical than I would like to go through, but this perhaps would give you a view that actually when you try to construct an explicit model, many issues come about. And so hopefully these are actually giving us useful lessons about what are the possibilities beyond the standard model. So sometimes you oftentimes have people saying that almost everything could go in string theory since there are 10 to the 500 back here. And so there's probably anything that people have come up with as a possibility beyond the standard model can be realized in string theory. But I hope that this kind of examples give you an idea that sometimes when you try to get something that you want, there are new issues that arise and that makes the problem interesting. Okay. But I haven't told you about the other solutions. So there are other solutions where there are non-zero free-form flux. So the example that I gave you earlier is the one that is without the background free-form flux at all. So you can show as an exercise, actually there are two exercises. There are two particularly interesting solutions. So when n is equal to 3, g is equal to 1, and f is equal to 1. It's also a solution to this threshold. And this gives you an n equals to 1 flux vacuum with the chirals with the gauge rule of the standard model, but with only one chiral family. Now, why is it interesting? Well, at least this gives you a proof of concept that there are some flux back here that incorporate both supersymmetry and chirality. Of course, we are only looking at a very simple example, a toroidal example. And perhaps in a more general setup, when you try to embed the same stories in a general Calabi-Yau or reinterpoles, you could find examples that are much more realistic. And if you relax the condition of the free-form flux being supersymmetry preserving, in particular if you turn on a zero free component of the flux, like over there, that breaks supersymmetry, but at least to leading all the preserve the node scale structure, there are more solutions. And in fact, as another homework exercise, you can show that the following free-form flux free-form flux is properly quantized for the value of the compact structure moduli. Well, it's okay. So there are solutions to the compact structure moduli for the torus, as well as the dilaton, where you try to minimize the potential. So which means that when you turn on this background flux, not only do they contribute to the tadpoles, they will also stabilize part of the moduli of the closed-ring background. So are there any questions? So a topic that unfortunately I don't have time to discuss is about warp throats. So but just to give you an idea, if you're interested to know more about details, we can talk about it at the coffee break. So far, the examples that I have described to you are models that have, I try to construct for you an example that have some features of the standard model, and at the same time, try to stabilize some of the moduli. But the examples that we have been discussing so far are so simple that the background flux is constant in the compact space. And so the warp factor that is generated by the background flux is rather mild. So you don't get a strongly warped background in the presence of the flux that we consider so far. But that's not always the case. You can consider turning on background fluxes that are localized in the internal space. And as Liam already discussed partly in his lecture yesterday, if you turn on background fluxes at a corner flow, you can generate a strongly warped background. And so in the case of a corner flow, the background fluxes that you turn on are localized, at least the Ramon-Ramon flux, is localized on an S3, whereas the consistency of the supergravity equation of motion tells you that you need to also turn on an NS-NS flux in the dual of the S3. And the corresponding solution is approximately ADS. It has a strongly warped factor. And the warp factor depends on the flux quanta that you turn on. So if you turn on if you turn on m unit of flux and minus k units of flux for the Ramon-Ramon and NS-NS three-form field, you get a warp factor at the tip being exponentially sensitive to the flux that you turn on So the important point here is not only do you generate a large hierarchy of scale, but the corresponding hierarchy is also stabilized. Now, it would be interesting to construct examples where, for instance, the standard model is localized on localized at the tip of the throat. Just like the Randall syndrome scenario, that would give you a way to explain the large hierarchy between the electroweak and the brain scale, because for the same reason. And as it turns out, the conical itself is too simple to give you a chiral series when you put deep brains at the tip of the throat. And on the gravity side, when you deform the conical, after the deformation, the gravity background is smooth. So as we said last time, smooth background, you put deep brains in a smooth background, you don't get chirality. And on the gauge theory side, the low energy degrees of freedom of the gauge theory dual of this background contains only blue balls. So the dynamics is not rich enough to contain the chiral spectrum of the standard model. But that's not too bad. There are other kind of singularities that could support chiral fermions. And you can essentially use the same technique that we discussed about the conical for this other kind of singularities. And in particular, there's a large class of toric singularities that also emit complex deformations. So for those kinds of singularities, you can, again, turn on three-form fluxes on an S3 and manage to get a background that has smooth infrared behavior, but with a leftover singularity that could support chiral fermions when you put deep brains at the singularity. So there's still a lot of work to be done. This is an interesting direction to go. So far, there's no explicit example where we know both the deep brain spectrum for this kind of models, as well as the explicit metric for this background. So for the we know very well this metric, but we don't have a standard model at the tip of the throat. For this other background, we know in principle you can get this Wobb metric. We also know what is the spectrum of the chiral matter and the gauge group, et cetera, coming from deep brains at the singularity. But the corresponding Wobb deformed background for this type of singularities, the explicit metric is not yet known. So it would be interesting to find out, because that would tell us something about the properties of the field theory dual, which is strongly coupled. So unfortunately, I don't have time to go through that part of the lectures in great detail. But I hope that in this three lectures, I've given you some flavor of the subject. And so in particular, the thing that I want you to take away from this lecture is a lot of issues would arise when you try to construct a standard model or a more explicit model within string theory. And hopefully the general lessons that we have learned could take us a step closer to the truth, to the reality. So thank you.